Liberty. Turn that on, excuse me. Good afternoon. Today's meeting, Wednesday, May 14th, 2025. Can I get a call to order, roll call, please?
Mr. Barbeau?
Here.
Ms. Edwards?
Here.
Mr. Fardenesh? Mr. Guthrie?
Here.
Mr. Hammond?
Here.
Ms. Marks?
Here.
Mr. Newton?
Here.
Mr. Paulding?
Here.
And Mr. Roberts?
Here.
We have a quorum.
And if we stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please. Led by Jim Guthrie.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay. This time I'd like to open up the floor to non-agenda public comments, please. Do I have any public comments? Hello. Ms. Tackard. Is it on?
How about that?
Yeah, it should be red.
Good afternoon. I'm Julie Tacker. And I have been in contact with your board a little bit over the last several months. Not my own discovery, but some further research that I have done. I have alerted you to some overpayments of a staff member and some, let's just call them payroll anomalies. In the last several weeks, I have done some more public records requests and learned that that same individual over contributed to their retirement benefits, and the district matched that at 100%. So that's had to be undone. Basically, what I want you to do, as I've asked you before, is a forensic audit on the payroll of the IWMA over the last several years. And I think you can put this matter to bed and stop that kind of behavior. This particular individual still has contact with the insurance company that the overpayment for retirement benefits occurred. And this individual no longer works for the IWMA. Those permissions should cease. There should be no contact between that individual and the insurance company. All contacts should go through the district, through the executive director. I have questions about the executive director's hand in all of this, but the person in charge is really you. It's really you, and you as a board need to take some measures to look into it and recover any and all funds that belong to me and each one of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Seeing no other public comment, bring it back to the board and we'll have a presentation. Who's doing the presentation today? Andrea?
Hello. Hi. Hello. Yeah, that'll be me. Hi, board. My name is Ashley Puder. I am the program coordinator. Peter is currently on vacation in Mexico. So Greg Ellis and I will be giving the staff report on his behalf. First item is the JACE compliance review. We are in the process of doing a compliance review with the state of California, CalRecycle. This is a regular compliance review. They do this once every 4 years. They intend to audit every single jurisdiction in the state in a 4-year time period. So we knew this was coming. A couple months ago, we got contacted them by a request for our implementation record for the 7 cities. So we are currently in the process with that. We are working with 3 different auditors who are auditing each of the 7 cities for compliance with mainly SB 1383, but all of the California state laws that we're working to keep compliance with. We knew this was coming. We're prepared for it. We have shared our implementation record with them. They have had it for a little over a couple weeks, or a little under a couple weeks now. They haven't asked us any questions yet. But that is the process that we are currently undertaking. So they are doing their desk audit of our implementation record. And then in the summer, they plan to come out and do a field visit. We've been working with the member jurisdictions to make sure that we're prepared for this, to make sure that we're providing them all the information that they're asking for. So that process is just underway right now. We are also in the process of our video outreach series. We are working with the contractor that was selected through that RFP process. They're called Out West Digital. We are in the post-production phase of the videos. They are almost done. We're going to have 4 complete videos, and then they're going to be packaged in different sizes to put out to our community. So we're hoping to finally get those into the hands of our member jurisdictions and the public around summer. That process is pretty much wrapping up. And then on the waste characterization study, they did the wet weather sample recently, and then soon they will be doing the dry weather sample, and then after that we'll have some data on that waste characterization. Anything else? Thank you.
Was that it? Okay.
Thank you
for that report. Do we have any questions? Questions from my right? No? Any questions on the left? No? Okay. Seeing no questions, we'll move on to the consent agenda. Is there any public comment for the consent agenda?
Hello. Good afternoon
again. Mic on.
There it is. Good afternoon again, Hello. Julie Tacker. And I wanted to just touch on some of the past minutes. I reflect, there's some comments in your letter that I sent to you last night that speak to some what appear to be Brown Act violations, and I'd like you to follow up on those. But I wanted to speak to you about the monthly financial reports. I did make some mention of that in the letter, but what's glaring to me is a change in format with regard to the credit card processing. Previously, at the end of your financials, there's a section that's all credit cards. Now they're interspersed within the warrants, and that's harder to track. And I just question the methodology there and why that's happened. I've gone to some of your cities and see how your financials are processed. And again, the credit cards are pulled out to be seen in a separate block of expenditures. So question for your staff, why has that changed? You have this bookkeeper that does not have a contract, and actually, again, in some of the public records I've seen, this is how we're going to do it now, and no explanation, and I'd like you to look into that.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment on the consent agenda? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board and go over the consent agenda. Number 5, the executive committee meeting minutes, board meeting minutes review. Number 6, number 7, monthly financial reports. Number 8, the County of San Luis Obispo audit control treasurer tax collector agreement. Does anyone want to change the consent agenda or pull anything from that?
I wanted to pull the monthly financial report. I had a question.
Okay. Go ahead, sir.
We seem to have rather substantial bills when asked legal counsel, since they're regarding legal counsel. They're rather substantial. I'm curious how, we could look at those bills individually, I assume, but I'm curious how much of that is a result of your review of public records requests.
Thank you, Director Bobo.
How many public records requests you've had to review?
So I don't have that figure off the top of my head. I also can't quite find the monthly financials. Of course, we're happy to review those documents with you at any time, and would encourage you to do that outside of so that I don't have permission to breach attorney-client privilege. So happy to answer your question if you reach out to me.
Okay, because in that respect, though, how much, we have a budget for legal services. I'm wondering how much we are either under or exceeding our budget for legal services.
I am happy to follow up with you at the next meeting with that.
That wouldn't be privileged, that would be.
No, that's correct, and I'm happy to get that to you.
Got it. And then I did have a question because I did not, as an individual noter, I did not see the credit card. Normally it was a page, but I'm okay that there's been a change of process, but I did want to understand what that change of process was in terms of how they're displayed. And I don't know if anybody on staff can answer that question since the bookkeeping is done out of house now. Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you. Thanks. I'm good.
Any other questions?
I just wanted to pull item 6 out. I was not here for the meeting on March 12th, so I was not on the board at that time, so I would like to abstain myself.
Okay. Pull item number 6. Can I get a motion to accept the agenda with number 6 pulled?
Happy to make a motion if you like.
Need a second, please.
That'll be 5,
7,
7 and 8, correct?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay, got a first. Need a second, please.
I'll second it.
We have a second. Okay, is it a roll call?
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Barbeau?
Yes.
Ms. Edwards?
Yes.
Mr. Fardanesh?
Yes.
Mr. Guthrie?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Mr. Paulding?
Yes.
And Mr. Robert?
Yes.
This motion passes.
Okay, we'll go over 6 now.
I do have a comment. I've got a comment on item 8, which is just that this is the way that it usually works, and it works really well. So I'm going to be supporting that. Although we just voted on it. Okay. What I wanted to point out was that the internal control checklist there, I think, is excellent, and it's the same for all of the different agencies. It's the same one that applies to the Air Pollution Control District, and I think it's really a very good protocol for the IDMMA to go through. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. And what was your questions on number 6? What do you want to do?
Yeah, I just need to abstain from March 12th. I was
I'm sorry. March 12th. I'm sorry. I misunderstood you.
Okay. I'll move approval of item 6.
Okay, so wait, we didn't mean to pull that. We just need to abstain. I misunderstood him.
But you need to pull it so he can abstain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So I'll move a separate approval of item A6, or not item 6.
And I'll second that.
Okay, thank you.
Can you please repeat the motion and second?
The motion is to approve item 6, the minutes.
Thank you. Mr. Barbeau?
Yes.
Mr. Guthrie?
Yes.
Ms. Edwards?
Yes.
Mr. Fardanesh?
Abstain.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Mr. Paulding?
I'll abstain as well, as I was not present on the April 9th meeting. Thanks.
Mr. Robert?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Okay. Okay. And a regular agenda public comment. Anyone like to make any comments on the regular agenda today?
Julie Tacker, and I would actually like to speak to the items after they're presented.
Okay.
Individually, if you'll ask again.
Yes.
I appreciate that.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, seeing none. Item 9, sale of surplus property.
Can you read that?
Yeah.
So item 9, the recommendation is to authorize the board president to perform any further acts to execute and deliver any documents that may be reasonably necessary to effectuate the sale of surplus property and amend the board's procedures for disposition of Oso Street surplus property. I'll hand over to Daniel.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Ashley. So at your last meeting, your board approved both an authorization a resolution finding that the 870 Oso Street building was in fact surplus property. You also approved, just so that, of course, you know, but also the public knows, a set of procedures about how that sale would move forward. So those procedures are included in your meeting packet starting on page 38. The two recommendations are simply that you authorize the board president to perform any acts, to sign documents, and just to be specific, but we would request that your authorization is broad. The first one is that if the district receives an offer, usually those offers, you may know, sort of expire at the end of 72 hours, but the counteroffer would really just say, please extend that to 30 days. And we need someone from the agency to be able to sign that counteroffer on your behalf. The second document is really just pro forma and sort of logistical documents related to receiving the offers and making sure that your board can consider them and ultimately act on them in a regular notice meeting. I do clarify in the staff report that according to your procedures, but also according to the requirements of the law, your board will need to vote to authorize the final sale. And so this is not authorizing President Robert to approve the sale. It's just to sign documents that come along the way to make sure that your offers are valid until such time that your board can act on them. The second change is in blue on page 32 of your meeting packet. What it simply says is that your board authorizes your agent that the agency has retained to post the property in accordance with best practice for listing commercial properties. Initially, when we had copied the policy over, it was taken from another city or district, but the IWMA is unique, San Luis Obispo County is unique, and so the recommendation here is simply to tell the real estate agent to list it in accordance with best practice for commercial properties. And of course, your board will receive all of those offers and be able to consider them. Just a quick status update on that. So per your board's direction at the last meeting, Mr. Cron did contact three real estate agents and made the decision to retain Derek Sen with Anderson Real Estate. And we are expecting right now for the property to be listed early next week. And so that's going to be public, it's going to be on MLS, and it'll be marketed like any other commercial property. And then at the end of that process, you will be able to consider the offers that come in. Happy to answer any other questions that you might have.
Any questions from our right, please?
Yeah, Robert. Daniel, is our agency required to comply with the State Surplus Land Act?
Thank you. So the answer is yes. The agency is required to comply with the Surplus Land Act, but this specific property is exempt from those requirements. And that finding is actually in the resolution that your board approved. So we have met all of those requirements. I actually just heard back today from the State Department of Housing and Urban Development, I believe. So we've submitted that resolution to them for their approval as well.
Thank you. Any other questions? Mr. Mullen, you have a question? Your mic is on.
Yes, I'm curious, do we place an asking price, or is this going to essentially be more or less a bidding situation?
So there is an asking price that will be listed based on the recommendation of the real estate agent. So this is based on an informal appraisal. One thing that may be worth clarifying is that the conditions of sale will require the buyer to conduct an appraisal at the end of the process, so that your board can confirm that you're not selling it below a sort of appraised market price. So the buyer will be responsible for that regardless of whether their financing source requires it.
They won't conduct it, they will commission an appraisal.
That's correct. So
partial.
They'll have to conduct it through, okay. They'll be responsible for conducting and paying for it through a licensed appraiser.
Got it. Is there a reason that isn't done up front in terms of setting the asking price?
So that was a decision that was made by the agency in consultation with the real estate agent. Typically, appraisals, as some of you may know, appraisals tend to be subjective. Mm-hmm. And so the agency will be conducting a building inspection report so that all of that information is available to prospective buyers. But the decision was that having an appraisal done at this stage in the process might sort of artificially anchor the price outside of what the market might consider. And of course, all of you probably know, appraisals are backward looking.
Sure.
And so it sets the price sort of with a different context.
No. Thank you. That helps me understand it. I assume we're selling this as is, so that if a buyer came back and said, hey, we want you to fix X, Y, or Z, that the answer is we're not engaging in repairs?
That is correct.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, at this time, I'll open up to public comment. Welcome back.
Thank you. Julie Tacker. One question that came to mind was answered. Mr. Derek Sin has been engaged as the real estate broker. He happened to be the same broker that negotiated the 555 Choro purchase, which you asked about an appraisal, and there was not one done for 555 Choro, or certainly not one provided through the Public Record Act, which I think is not legally required because you paid cash. Had you gone through a bank would have wanted to see that appraisal. Well, guess what? I'm the bank. You're the bank. Public is the bank. An appraisal should have been done. And I think in light of some of the problems with the building and the location and the issues there, you might have got a better price if you'd seen an actual appraisal and some disclosures about the activity that goes on in the neighborhood right there. Better price for me, for you, the ratepayer. What Mr. Chung did not say about Mr. Sin, that there were three real estate brokers contacted, but what you wanted was to hear what the commission would be. What is the agreed upon commission of Mr. Sin? And I requested that in a public records request. And yes, it costs the district money when I do a public records request, but I think that information is something you would want to know as well. What was the commission for Mr. Sin in the purchase of 555 Choro? What will the commission be in the sale of 870 Osos? That is public information, and it should be disclosed. It should have been in the staff report, because that was a question you asked at your last meeting. And that was a question that you wanted ferreted, in that you wanted three bids, and you don't have that answer, and I'd like that answer today.
Very good, thank you. Any other public comments? Seeing none, bring it back to the board. Now, do we need a vote on this, or is this just information?
Yes, this will require a vote.
Okay, and get a motion for this, please. Would like to make a motion?
I'll move staff's recommendation.
Okay. Second.
Second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Paulding?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Barbeau?
Yes.
Ms. Edwards?
Yes.
Mr. Fardenesh?
Aye.
Mr. Guthrie?
Yes.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Mr. Robert?
Yes.
This motion passes.
Thank you. Moving on to number 10, solid waste management fee rate study draft report. We're on your page 40.
So the recommendation is to review and discuss the proposed solid waste management fee rate study and proposed rate stabilization model. Give staff direction to return at the June 2025 board meeting with a final report. On November 13th, the board authorized staff to finalize a contract with R3. The purpose of this fee study had four main points: to make sure fees reflect cost of service, they're easy to understand, they adequately fund the IWMA and its programs, they'd be easily adjustable to meet future uncertainties. So with that, I will turn it over.
I want to get a clicker.
Hello.
Oop, and I lost it.
Whoops.
Did I do that?
It's the wrong, there it is.
Excellent. Thank you, Board President, board members, staff, and members of the public. I'm Garth Schultz, president with R3 Consulting Group. I was here when you considered the contract with us back in November, and have actually presented to a number of your agency boards or councils on other matters involving solid waste rates and rate adjustments in the past year. So here today, just to present in summary fashion, the results of our study and the draft recommendations for adjustments to your solid waste management fee, which is collected on gross revenues paid by ratepayers to your solid waste collectors here in the county. So this is what we'll cover. So as you know already, we conducted the analysis of solid waste management fees. And what this slide is detailing is the basis, the financial and numeric basis that we used for our analysis and some of the backgrounds. So first off, you have an existing solid waste management fee, which was authorized by the board some years ago at 5.4% of gross revenues. You've reduced that administratively a couple times below that maximum amount. And the amounts calculated over the next 5 years via our study remain below that 5.4%, and in fact below the current 3% that you're extending to fund the agency. Through our efforts, we've found that the recommended rate adjustments or SWMF amounts would adequately fund the expenses of the authority, which includes an offset to the needed revenues through use of rate stabilization reserves that you're carrying in your funds. The recommended amounts are fair and equitable to ratepayers in that there are different amounts recommended for commercial versus residential subscriber classifications, and also for those that are in or out of areas that are exempt from the requirements of SB 1383, and I can demonstrate on slides how that was accomplished. It's actually a little bit less easy to understand than I would like, but the outcome is logical and consistent and appropriate with the overall cost of providing service. And we find here that the recommendations are therefore in compliance with the expectations of Prop 218, that the rate is not more than necessary to fund the expenses of the authority, and that they are proportional to the cost of service that you incur in providing services to those different subscriber classifications. I like jumping to the end game first, so this is really the kind of the splash page. This is the end recommendation of our study, and I'll kind of walk you through how we arrived at this in the subsequent slides. But you can see here we've broken out four different combinations of subscriber classifications, two for residential and two for commercial. And you can see what those are in terms of exempt accounts, meaning those accounts that are not required to comply with the requirements of Prop 218, and then the SB 1383 accounts are those that are required to comply by virtue of not being exempted by population basis. You can see the historical amounts that the IWMA has extended to the ratepayers to fund the costs of your operations, 5.4% in fiscal year 22-23, reduced by 1% down to 4.4% in 23-24, and then this time last year reduced down again to 3%. Going forward, you can see the recommendations by subscriber classification, again here as a percentage of gross revenues, and all below the existing authorization that you have at that maximum ceiling of 5.4%. The variances between the different classifications are in accordance with different cost centers for each of them. So for example, commercial has an outreach and education program that is not related to SB 1383. Those expenses here are funded and allocated entirely by commercial subscribers and not the residential subscribers. And the opposite is true. You have household hazardous waste collection, which is available to residential subscribers. Commercial small quantity generators can also access that program, but through their own funding source. So again, they're bifurcated and split between the different subscriber types. This is showing you the information that was in the table, just in an easier to see chart format. And all of this is contained in our report that's attached to your staff pack or your board packet today. So you can see for residential SWMPs, for the draft for fiscal year 25-26 would be if you're in an area that is covered by SB 1383 regulations, it would be 1.77% of gross revenues. And if you're an exempt area, it would be 0.84% of gross revenues. And you can see the changes over time. Part of the reason for the changes is different funding availability. In fiscal year 25-26, there's still anticipated being SB 1383 grants that offset some of the other expenses of the agency and the SB 1383 program itself, and likewise the potential surplus sale of property that you just discussed in your last item. So that's why you see some of a step up into the future years. Similar story for the commercial SWMFs, and with similar reasons for some of the variances. One thing you might ask, and I'll just answer here before it is asked, is the reason that the commercial SWMFs are slightly less than the residential SWMF is twofold. There is a projection of some reductions to the commercial outreach and education program and the SB 1383 program and over the course of coming years as those programs reach some maturity and the potential grant funding from the state is anticipated to expire. The other reason is that the HHW expenses on the residential side are projected to increase based on the budget for fiscal year 25-26 developed by your outgoing former executive director, Mr. Cron. I've already covered most of this background. I think that the key thing to note here is all of those recommended percentages of gross revenues contemplate offsetting revenue need through use, strategic use of rate stabilization reserves that are held in your overall IWMA reserves and funding now. So that rate stabilization is offsetting what the ratepayers would otherwise need to pay in order to cover the cost of service. And I have a chart demonstrating how over the period of this 5 years, you expend what you would from those rate stabilization reserves and achieve revenue and expense neutrality in starting in year six. This is all the information that we gathered during the course of the project, your budgeted and actual expenses for last fiscal year, this fiscal year, the coming fiscal year, projections for fiscal years after that. Reports of the SWMF solid waste management fee monies paid by the various haulers to the agency over several fiscal years. Their reports of gross revenues that they've received over that same period of time. Their reports of the number of subscribers that are both covered by and exempt from SB 1383 regulations. And then we also sought with the haulers that, you know, clarification on that data. It's not always a perfect answer the first time we get it. So it's a period of confirmation to make sure that what they're providing jives with the SBWMA records and some logic tests that we run to make sure that what they're putting forth is reasonable and accurate. I should say IWMA staff and the haulers were very cooperative during the course of this process. We got what we needed in order to conduct the analysis in relatively short order, so they were very helpful. I covered some of these details already, and forgive me for these next three slides. They're a little more word-heavy than I tend to like, but I wanted to make sure you had an understanding of the basis of the expense projections in particular that we've put forth. So for the residential, first off, there are revenues that come into your programs, some of which are dedicated specifically to residential programs, some of which are dedicated to specifically to commercial programs, and some of which serve both sets of communities and are effectively shared revenues. Likewise, you have shared and dedicated expense sources. So we've sought anytime there's a dedicated fund or a revenue stream that would go to offset a dedicated expense within a given rate player classification, anything that was a shared revenue or a shared expense, we had to allocate across residential versus commercial in order to apply those revenues and expenses between the two categories. So you can see on the top line here, the residential revenues include obviously the residential SWMF itself, curbside L payments, household hazardous waste program payments from outside agencies that come in and use the, your programs, and then 48%, which is the proportionate share of all other revenues. That 48% is coming from the most recent percentage share of solid waste management fees that you've received. So we sought to kind of maintain that that throughout the course of the 5 years. You can see similar detail for commercial revenues, so different set of dedicated revenue streams for commercial, and you can see the allocation for all other revenues that we've identified, 48 for residential, 52 for commercial. And those other revenues are listed below. Those are not the subject of our study. We weren't looking at the landfill tipping fee surcharge. You've got SB 1383 grant revenues from the state that are applying this year and next year and then are projected to sunset. and then other revenues, as you noted, including the potential sale of the property, which is itemized in the figures that were provided to us for the forthcoming fiscal year. In terms of expenses, again, we, as I've already described, sought to allocate those individually by program type. Importantly here, we did, for SB 1383 program expenses, we've allocated 35% of that to residential and 65% to commercial, which is an estimate. There's not a detailed accounting within your financial systems of exactly what's for residential versus what's for commercial, but through our work and experience working with agencies like yours and others up and down the state, most of the output of an SB 1383 program is focused on commercial organics generators and getting them into compliance, whereas there's some amount of outreach and education and monitoring of residential subscribers, but on the whole, that's a more stable and a more mature program compared to commercial. So that's the basis of that allocation. And then expense projections going forward. So again, I've mentioned a couple times, SB 1383 expenses are projected to be reduced partially through projected non-availability of the CalRecycle grants, but also maturation of that program as it's kind of gotten its legs under it. We've carried that 48.52 revenue allocation into shared expenses as well, and that maintains throughout the five-year period. And then for any cost area or expense area that we didn't otherwise receive some sort of feedback from your former executive director that would have a projected change, like a reduction to SB 1383 programs or a reduction to commercial outreach, we've applied an estimated 4.5% COLA or inflationary adjustment per year over the course of the five-year period. Okay, so taking all of those things together, this is what it looks like. There's a lot of numbers in these. I don't expect you to read and see all of it right off the tip of your mind, but I do want to draw your attention to the top line of the residential row, which shows this is a chart just affecting residential revenue and expense allocations in the calculation of residential SWIMF. So you can see on the very top line, starting with $317,000, going to $246,000. That's the estimated amount of revenues from those covered by SB 1383 in their SWIMF payments. And then a few lines down below that first blue row, you can see residential expenses for SB 1383. And because of rounding, we're rounding everything to the nearest thousand here, and then we've got to calculate things to the nearest cents on a percentage. We're off by a couple thousand dollars in a couple of these columns. The point I'm trying to make here is this is demonstration of purpose, of intent here, which is that residential SB 1383 cover generators would be paying for residential SB 1383 allocated expenses. So that's the main objective. And then drawing your attention to the bottom line, you can see a proportionate and allocated amount for use of rate stabilization reserves amounting to $467,000 in year one, being gradually reduced each year through year five. And we do have 6 years on this chart. That's intentional to demonstrate that you've got revenue neutrality compared to expenses in year six. So by year six, ultimately, you don't need to use rate stabilization reserves. Your SWIMF amounts should be at a level that cover expenses, assuming that, you know, this plan and your expenses kind of move forward in the way that's demonstrated. Similar story for the commercial. And again, those subscribing or in an area that where they have to subscribe to SB 1383 services, they're paying the funds to cover the programmatic costs for SB 1383. And again, by year six, maintaining that revenue balance with expenses. And then all together, this is everything all together. And ultimately, one of the things that we were aware of is kind of the target remaining fund balance that the board and the executive director found would be appropriate coming up to year six. And that is all here. So this is my favorite chart of the entire thing. This tells the story all in one place, and I'll walk you through it here. So in orange, we have total revenues over the planning period, 5 years of recommended SWIMFs plus 6 year, for example, purposes. That's shown in orange, and that's inclusive of all revenues, your solid waste management fees plus other revenues from other sources. In gray is shown the projected expenses. You can see a little bit of a dip from 25, 26 to 26, 27. That's because of the aforementioned reduction in SB 1383 program expenses because of non-availability of the grant. In yellow is the use of rate stabilization reserves, effectively offsetting the difference between the orange and the blue columns. And then importantly, the fund balance is the line in blue and on the same scale, the same axis on the left-hand side, going from, you know, roughly 6.8 million projected for the start of fiscal year 25-26 to 3 million roughly by the start of fiscal year 2030-2031. Okay, and then when the rubber hits the road, ultimately what we're looking at here is what are the revenue needs by SWMF category, residential versus commercial, SB 1383 covered versus not. So what we did was we applied the revenue stream to cover those expenses against the gross revenues that are projected for those sectors to arrive at percentage of SWMF. And this is the part that's a little bit more complicated than I'd like it to be in terms of expressing it to you here. But effectively, we calculate 1% and then another percentage, and then we have to add two together if we're going to be calculating a percentage that's covering everybody in your SB 1383 covered areas. So the top chart is just those for the SB 1383 exempt accounts. It's not a very large number of accounts, but those folks would be paying just for the programs and services that don't include SB 1383. And then for all other accounts, which is the majority of residential accounts, they pay that plus an additional percentage to arrive at that very bottom line blue row, starting at 1.77% of gross revenues and ending in year six at 3.37. So a gradual increase over the period of years. Actually, year five, 5 years on this chart. Our model does actually project it out into a year six, and certainly it can be adjusted by staff going forward. So one of the objectives for this study was to have it be something that could be amended and adjusted over the course of time as you have better information about revenues and expenses. It's a fairly straightforward set of updates that could be done to project it out even further into the future. And here again is what it looks like. Same story for your commercial generators, both those in exempt areas and the SB 1383 covered areas. Okay, that was a lot of numbers up there, trying to make it inclusive and complete while still yet succinct. I'm here to have answer any questions you might have, and just thank you for engaging us in this effort. It was a good project. We're really proud of this agency in terms of, you know, the position that you're in. I haven't been able to confer with legal counsel, but my assumption here is that given that you've already got an authorized 5.4% SWMF on gross revenues, that these actions wouldn't require additional notice or adoption because it's below what you've already approved in prior years. Thank you for your time.
Very good. Any questions from my right? Yeah.
On that one chart you have towards the beginning where you show the different rates based per year, residential, commercial, and exempt. Let's see here. Yeah, perfect. In year 25-26, when you're looking at the residential and you see the SB 1383 account at 1.77 and you compare it to the same category in the commercial and you see the commercial rate's higher and then it flip-flops, is the assumption here that there's a residential grant that's offsetting the residential rate? Because in my mind, you know, residential would stay at one rate and commercial, they wouldn't flip-flop. As far as who's higher.
Right, yeah, so you're talking about the 1.77 for SB 1383 accounts for residential versus the 2.06?
Correct. But then you look at the next year, and then all of a sudden the residential is higher than the commercial rate.
That was called out for me as well in my preparation of the memo and moving that forward. I believe it's a combination of factors resulting in that. So there's a few different variables that are changing between 25-26 and 26-27. One is that you've got this fairly significant SB 1383 grant that is contemplated to go away. And I think that's driving a part of that flip. The other is that you've got allocation of surplus revenues across some of the other revenue streams and a reduction to the SB 1383 program overall. So I, I think I can follow up with a more specified response to this question. I did notice it. I did look at it. The math works. I think it's just a combination of other changes in condition and variables that's contributing to that shift.
Okay. Because it seemed like most of the grants normally help out on the commercial side more than residential. So that's why it's kind of...
And in this one, you just get a lump sum that comes in, right? So you get a lump sum from the state. You get to apply it to your SB 1383 programs overall. And, you know, our assumption in this model here, right, is that any of the SB 1383 expenses more heavily weighted towards commercial. So as those expenses reduce, I think you also see a greater reduction to commercial than you do to residential. That's part of what I think is happening.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Yes, Ms.
I just may have missed it, but how does our reserve fund figure into all this? I'm assuming that the reserve fund is being protected.
So what I'm aware of is simply your undesignated fund balance. I haven't looked at the rest of your financials as we've gone into this study. If you have other designated reserves that aren't just your fund balance, that I can't speak to.
Okay.
What I can speak to is that you've got an available fund balance in today's terms of, you know, over $6 million. And that there was an intention here through this study to use that to offset SWMF adjustments going forward. So it's still sufficient, right? By year six here, you're going to be at $3 million, which is still over 50% of your annual expenditures. So in terms of what I would normally look at as a safe amount of reserves, you're still well over half a year's worth of reserves come year six. So that seems to be adequate and sufficient to cover unknown circumstances or future needs, while not maintaining higher than you need in that fund.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone on this, right?
Okay. Go ahead. Well, thank you for your report. Very detailed. Appreciate it. A couple of questions I have. One is regarding your assumptions. One, going back to the $3 million balance fund, remaining $3 million. Why did we choose $3 million and not a different figure?
My understanding was the executive director met with an executive or finance committee with some of the earlier draft of this study in the report, and that was a figure that was determined internally by IWMA executive director and, I believe, a committee.
So I'll chime in. Director Fardanesh and Director Marks, those are very important questions. So as you know, at the end of last year, your board was presented with the state of the reserve fund. So that reserve fund clearly was in excess of what is required by the reserve policy that you have, an operational reserve. You also have a reserve for emergencies with the HHW sites. So this spend down is a piece of what has now been reviewed by two different ad hoc committees. This came out of a recommendation from the, I think at the time we called it the Strategic Planning Ad Hoc Committee, which specifically looked at this question of how do we take this, how do we spend down the reserve fund so that it goes back to the ratepayers and to the member jurisdictions. So it was reviewed first by that Strategic Planning Ad Hoc Committee, and then it was reviewed again by your Ad Hoc Budget Committee, which looked at this and presented this as part of their recommendation in how you could spend that down. Your executive director didn't come up with it unilaterally. It was discussed by two different ad hoc committees.
Thank you.
The next question is the 4.5% increase in expenses. Did you say that was just based on CPI, the 4.5%?
It's a projection of, you know, if I could project what inflation was going to do, I wouldn't be a solid waste consultant. I'd be doing something else. It's just an assumption of change in expenses over the course of time for the next 5 years. So it's meant to be a representation of cost of living adjustments on your contracts and staff and everything else. That was discussed in consultation with the executive director. And it's fairly standard for such projections when we're working on financial projections with other agencies.
The next question is, So am I correct that a lot of these numbers were based on the 23-24 fiscal year as well as, and then obviously 24-25 fiscal year?
So yeah, we reviewed 23-24, 24-25, a draft program allocation for 25-26, and then some projected future adjustments to program, specific program categories for 26-27.
Because one of the reasons that we had the rates go up to 5.4% was at the time the county left the IWMA, and the county didn't come back to IWMA till, from what I recall, towards end of 23. So our revenues may not be totally what they should be because the county was missing. Was that taken into account?
We used and based the gross revenue projection from the hauling operations as of their fiscal year 23-24 actuals and their 24-25 year to date. We also put forth before them our estimates based on what they gave us and what we look through in IWMA records to say, here's our best sense of what we think 25-26 is going to be. Can you confirm or correct us on that? And they did so. So that was also a part of the process for the projection of gross revenues on which this WIMF is charged.
Okay. All right. And then one last question is that, do we anticipate the exempt revenues from SB 1383, the ones that are exempt, do we expect the revenue to decrease as more waste haulers maybe consolidate or the regulations change or anything like that?
I don't think so. I mean, at this time, right, this is, it's really a geographic area designation, right? So any hauler consolidation, you're still dealing with the same population of waste generators and rate payers within those geographic areas. So I don't think that's going to change that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone on the line?
Yes. Go ahead. Yes. Thank you. In terms of assumptions, one of the reasons we have higher reserves than we originally anticipated, I mean, there were two primary causes. One was the agency did a very good job of implementing 1383 with less staff than anticipated. But also, hauler contracts got bigger rate increases than were anticipated when we originally set the 5.4% fee, which, of course, these then higher reserves generated by that higher income allowed us to reduce the rates. But my question is, going forward, what did you anticipate in terms of hauler rate increases that would then drive this SWIMF revenue numbers?
Yeah, great, good question. There again, we applied a 4.5%. And over the course of my career, I've been doing this almost 20 years. Even though we see spikes in rates that happen either in response to new regulations or unforeseen circumstances or other conditions that you've seen here in the county periodically over the last 6 to 10 years, still when you run a trend line on those, you run up between 4 and 5% per year because it's so very largely labor, fuel, and capital driven. So we are not anticipating future spikes in gross revenues because of some future change in hauler compensation. And we think that's adequate, right? Most, if not all of your, and I haven't worked with all of your agencies on your rate adjustments, but I've worked with most of them, Jordan and I both, with I think 11 of you over the course of the last year. Most of the agencies have implemented at this point in time a rate approach that is an indexed rate approach that will last at least the next 5 years. Okay. And the only exemption or change to that would be if there's some force majeure event that dramatically changes their pro formas. Okay. And the haulers would have to come forward to request that. Put another way, they're tied to basically a CPI index formula over the course of the next 5 years that should provide for stable rate adjustments and therefore revenues over at least the next five.
Perfect. Yeah, so the rate shock of implementing 1383 is over, and you think we're returned to a normal trend line of future rate increases for projecting revenue?
That's correct. And okay. We scan the horizon. That's something we take into account. There are other potential drivers of future spikes, some of which have waned a little bit in the beginning of this year. So, for example, zero emission vehicle mandate through CARB, the advanced clean fleet rule was originally set out to also apply to private hauling operations. With California withdrawing its waiver to the Clean Air Act, that's no longer on the table, right? So we can kind of push that out at least a few years. And there's no other known kind of, you know, punctuated moments of operational change or cost changes that we're aware of.
Got it. And obviously our next item on the agenda is talking about our draft budget for 25-26. So obviously if we adopted, you know, a more stringent budget or decided to spend money on something, it would have the potential to affect the needed rates.
That's correct. It would. However, that would just be a matter of updating values in our model, and it would generate a different result. And you'll note, and I made sure to check this in terms of the budget that's included in the agenda and the figures in ours. And if you look at the revenue and expense lines for fiscal year 25-26 in our memo and its attachments and tables and compare them to the draft budget that's put forward, we're pretty much spot on because we collaborated with the executive director in including those figures. Any differences are really just rounding errors to the nearest thousand that we're applying in our model.
Right. So it doesn't project any significant one-time expenditures in the next year or two.
No, but the one thing we do account for in our model, again, is the projected capital. There's a projected capital expense in fiscal year 25-26, which we used, and we also included the projected revenue from the sale of surplus property.
Okay. Thank you. Very good report.
Any other questions? No?
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you for that report. It was very informative and very hard to follow in some areas. Thank you. A lot of numbers. Yeah. At this time, I'd like to open it up for public comment. Any public comment? No public comment? All right. So do we have any further direction to staff? Anyone like to make any further direction?
Mr. President, I think staff has taken notes based on the conversation. If there's any specific direction or questions that you'd like the staff to come back with, they can do that for the next meeting.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry, I have a question regarding that then, because so we are not, are we to give guidance that, yeah, this looks like a good direction to go, and staff will come back with a formal rate resolution, or are we going to adopt the formal rate resolution along with a budget in June?
So I think it's both of those. So the purpose of this meeting is for you just to discuss and to receive this report, the rate study. Based on your feedback and the questions that you asked, staff will go back and work on the rate resolution and the budget. That includes all of those things.
Okay. Bring it back. Okay.
I would just note, though, that, you know, in this, I think you did an outstanding job of presenting the data, even though it's, you know, a lot of numbers. But obviously, you know, we've been lowering the rate, which I think the ratepayers are and should be appreciative of, I think largely due to good management. But clearly, if we, you know, adopt a point, well, these very low rates for 25-26, and then we'll be gradually increasing them. So we will have this, you know, we're going to go way low. which is probably the right thing to do to expend reserves, and then we're going to gradually climb back up to hopefully a sustainable level. But our string of success, if you will, in lowering rates will come to an end, and we'll be in the mode of gradually increasing them. And we as elected officials should all, you know, understand and be aware of that. So.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay.
No, I just want to make a quick comment. Is this where we could talk about possibility of reviewing this on an annual basis, right, before we approve our budget? So do we, you know, I think that would be nice just to see how our assumptions.
Because it is adjustable.
Out. Yeah.
Absolutely, Director Fardanesh. I know this has come up in the various ad hoc committees as well. The intention here, this is the rate study. So this is the study that has all of the assumptions built in. But in the end, with the rate resolution that Director Bo brought up, you're not going to be approving all of them all in one chunk. Your board will revisit these every year, including the rate and the spend down. the drawdown from the reserve. So every year, you'll be able to revisit based on market conditions, based on assumptions. And so you will have that come to you each year is the intention here.
Robert? Yes, yeah, question. I'll just comment. Basically, you know, I think after, what, 3 or 4 or 5 years since SB 1383 got engaged, you know, we really didn't know what we were going to cost. And, you know, with the fact that now it's more stabilized and we did have extra, you know, it's a good way, I think, to give this money back and stabilize the ratepayers for quite a long time and still yet get the job done. So I think it's a great plan, you know, without having any disruption to anybody really at this point. So perfect use. And then we melt down to $3 million on the reserves at that point, which is certainly good to have if we need it. So well done.
Any other comments? Okay. Close that up. Thank you very much. Moving on to item 11, fiscal year 25-25.
Yes. Yeah, I did. Oh, you did. Thank you.
Because she said no. The public said no. The revenue and spending plan on page 50. Recommendations, review and discuss the proper fiscal year budget 25-26, review and spending plan, and give staff direction to return at the June 25th board meeting with the final fiscal year 25-26 revenue and spending plan. Who is presenting that? Andrea? Is that you? Who's doing that?
Pulling up our notes. Let's see. Okay, yeah. Okay. So the fiscal year budget 2025-2026 draft revenue and spending plan. Your ad hoc committee met and discussed the draft budget and spending plan on April 15th in 2025. Today what's discussed is the fiscal year 2025-2026 revenue spending plan with the full board. And the intent is at the June board meeting, we will present the preliminary budget for adoption by the board. Under the fiscal year 2024-2025 budget, the IWMA has accomplished the following. We have introduced ArcGIS, which is a mapping software for both internal use for data and analysis and for community use. We have met substantial compliance and maintained that compliance with SB 1383, AB 1826, AB 341, and AB 939. We have temporarily reduced the solid waste management fee from 4.4% to 3%. We've implemented an AI-based platform called Zabble for standardizing the SB 1383 route review procedures. We've completed an RFP for SB 1383 education outreach video production that is almost at completion. We've conducted a rate study for solid waste management fee. We are conducting a waste characterization study. We have converted from Routeware's Recyclist platform to Smart 1383 reporting platforms to track data and compliance. Remaining in fiscal year 2024 and 2025 program goals are completing the rate study for the solid waste management fee, continuing to develop SB 1383 education outreach material, administering technical assistance grants, hosting a second annual countywide solid waste summit, filling all staff vacancies, and completing a rate stabilization model and a five-year plan. The draft revenue and spending plan reflects following focus areas for fiscal year 2025-2026. Achieving compliance with state mandates through minimum measures, performing deferred capital expense projects, complete one-time expenses under SB 1383 local assistance grant, continue to identify and correct program gaps, make necessary updates to IWMA policies and procedures, and improve IWMA engagement through new methods of community outreach. Here's a chart of the significant revenue assumptions for fiscal year 2025 and 2026. What's called out here is the revenue from the building sale, the interest revenue from reserves, and the decreased solid waste management fee reflected there. These are the significant expense assumptions for fiscal year 2025-26. An increase in HHW disposal costs is reflected here. One-time expenses from SB 1383 local assistance grant funding. And yeah. For the fiscal year 2025-2026 projected revenue and expenses, you'll note that it's showing a loss. A full budget presentation in June will have the 2024-2025 budget to actuals, as well as a five-year projection based upon the findings from the fee study. The fiscal year budget 2025-2026 draft revenue and spending plan. So the ad hoc committee met and discussed it on April 15th. Today, it is discussed with the full board. At the June board meeting, it will be presented for adoption by the board. Peter anticipates having the budget ad hoc meet before the June meeting, and a resolution to adopt the temporary fee at the June meeting, and with the goal to have a five-year rate stabilization based on the presentation. I'm on the right slide now. Yeah.
That's it.
Cool.
Thank you for that report.
Of course.
Started to my left this time. Have any questions?
Yes, thank you. On page 59 of the agenda, it says that, you know, the budget assumption was we would decrease the management fee from to 1.5%. But, you know, here we're talking about, you know, splitting it out between 1383 and 1383 exempt customers. It's at this point, 1.5 is more of an aggregate combined rate. I just want to make sure we weren't basing the spending plan on something that's contrary to what was just presented.
The microphone, please.
An aggregate simplification.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah, when you speak, good, please press.
I believe the mic. That's an aggregate simplification, but we'll have to wait for Peter because that came from him.
Okay. And the last thing is we had some discussion in the budget committee regarding some folks proposing that we, you know, spend down a chunk of reserves on buying some things for poor jurisdictions. That's not included in the expenditure plan, correct?
I don't believe we'll be using reserve funding to buy any special items. We do have
special trash cans and things.
Yeah, we do have a local assistance grant that is being spent in accordance with that grant proposal.
So, Director Borba, based on the operating deficit that's projected, I do not think that that program that was being contemplated is included in this spending plan.
Okay, good, because I mean, you know, I was certainly prepared to discuss it today, but because we had kind of mixed opinions in the budget committee about whether it was worthwhile to spend money on that sort of thing of buying, you know, fancy trash cans for folks for public use. And the other question is, it was a small amount, but what about the technical assistance grants? Are they in there, or are we not looking to do those in 25-26?
I believe there's 40,000 allocated for technical assistance grants, which is a reduction from past years.
Okay, which is a reduction. Okay, because I for one am not a big fan of that, but I mean that's something we can discuss when we get to, you know, the June meeting. So that's all my questions. Thank you.
Could you go back to where you had the one more? Okay, could you expand a little bit on the increase in it, you circle contracted services and public outreach education? Can you go into what those increases be, or is that something else we're going to wait for?
We'll have to get the exact figures from Peter, but I know the general costs for contracted services. I believe that's included some of the R3 work. It's included our video production.
Video production is included in the public outreach and education portion of it. Contracted services also reflects all of the HHW contract work that's done. So that is showing a increase in past years. But then, yeah, the outreach and education that's called out is for Science Discovery, Outwest Digital, the survey that we did over the summer, things of that nature.
I'm unable to hear you.
Okay, yes. The public outreach and education reflects like the Science Discovery contract and things of that nature, the video production that we are doing right now. And then contracted services includes like HHW expenses and things like that.
Isn't this next year's, am I misreading this? Isn't this actually next year's budget? So you're talking about
Yes, the public outreach and education would be allocated for the video series would be needing to allocate funding to do the distribution of that series then.
So are these circled because they're going up or they're just?
These are the one-time expenses from the SB 1383 local assistance grant funding. That's why they're circled.
All of this is related to that.
One circled in red. Here, there's a, he put a transition on it. So the circled in red there is the HHW disposal costs, and then that's one-time expenses from the SB 1383 local assistance grant funding. Does that clarify things?
Okay, and that's just for those particular items?
That's why those are called out. Yeah.
That's why I call them.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions on the left? Right, excuse me.
Yeah, Rob, a comment. I think with Charles' comment about the special projects, I remember the executive director was telling our ad hoc that he was going to go out to the member jurisdictions managers and ask, you know, if they would be interested in doing some sort of a, like a trash can or some sort of a project like that, and bring it back to us to further fund and pull. And his intent was to try to reduce, again, the surplus that we were doing on a one-time project. So I think that's what Charles was kind of thinking about, and trash cans for each cities. It was kind of discussed quite often there. So we'll see if that happens.
I can comment on that. Yeah, I actually think he already did that outreach, and they did supply him with some things. I think the discussion was whether that was the most appropriate way to deal with the, with, I hate the term spend down. I've forgotten the new term, but I believe that is actually listed in next year's work, that we'll bring that back to the board. We're not deciding that particular piece of it here. Okay.
Very good.
Thank you.
Any comments, questions?
Yeah, I have a comment. I think community engagement and outreach, increasing that is really important part of our mission. And in my experience, the various jurisdictions, the cities and the CSDs, have a lot of interest. Jim, a lot of interest and energy when it comes to our mission of recycling and dealing with organic waste. And so I hope that part of what we can do is reach out through our technical committee, or perhaps through the city managers and CSD managers, and see if we can get some community engagement that goes beyond what we're paying for, and including really raising consciousness in the general public, and trying to help coordinate some volunteer work. I think there's tremendous potential. So absolutely. Thank you.
Absolutely. Very important.
Actually, if we're going to discuss it right here, then I have some additional comments. I didn't think we were going to discuss this today.
Can you hold your comment? Yes, thank you. Mr. Paulding, you haven't spoken yet. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Chair. Just a couple brief comments. I echo that. I think we, when we got the survey results, we saw that there's a lot more education and outreach that can be done on our programs. I just wanted to echo the conversation around the public-facing containers for garbage and recycling for member jurisdictions. It sounds like the budget ad hoc committee had some thoughts on this, that. I know as part of the strategic planning committee, we had some thoughts on it. There were four main things that we were talking about in terms of the spend down. One was spending down reserves, which we've talked about, lowering fees to residential and commercial customers. Two was the public-facing containers. Three was addressing illegal dumping from a regional standpoint. And four was depackaging equipment for the anaerobic digester facility to offset an increase in pass-through costs. And so I get that we have some circles around these numbers. I'm not seeing those things indicated you know, in any level of detail here. I'm okay with that, but it sounds like we have some committees that made some recommendations that haven't been fully reported back to the board. So my global comment would be is when we do talk about the budget in June, we need a little bit more concrete reporting out from those committees in terms of the recommendations. And I would hope that, you know, if there was consensus on the committees, that those recommendations be made to our board, and our board would be able to see those reflected in the budget recommendations for next year. So thank you.
Good recommendations. Thank you. Anyone else?
Scott. Make a comment. I hear all these things about all these great things we can buy, but at the end of the day, we have to remember our JPA and its mandates only. So that's why I really much favor the rate reduction. And if we still have extra funds, it should go to further rate reductions. If we want trash cans in our individual, you know, cities, areas, outreach, we can all fund that within our own jurisdictions. You know, I come from a jurisdiction that's very heavy tourism. I don't want to spend money educating tourists that come and leave. This is money wasted. Other jurisdictions may make sense, but that's up to them to fund it, not our agency.
Noted. Okay. Jim?
like I say, as long as they're doing preliminary comments. So I think, unfortunately, we've started to treat this as a windfall rather than an overcollection. And that's really was. It was an overcollection. And we should be refunding as much as possible to those that we overcollected from. So I do understand there's some other discussion about increasing our reserve related to hazardous waste because there's some significant risk. That would be something that we might do anyway. And so therefore, refunding money to just then recollect it doesn't make sense. But as far as going outside of our primary primary goal here, which is to, that is not related to new trash cans or those kinds of things. So those are my comments.
Good comments. Very good.
Yes, sir.
Just one final comment. I do think there's a distinction between using grant monies in a prudent way versus, you know, the monies that we collect based on fees. And so to the extent that we have the SB 1383, you know, local grant assistance program, to the extent that there's a nexus with our education and outreach mission, I think we want to be not unwise in how we spend those funds, but generally speaking, it's a good idea to spend grant funds and ultimately do something good with it. So that would be a global comment. Thanks.
Absolutely. Ms. Marks. Okay. Yes, that's okay.
I have one more comment, and that's just it's really refreshing to be able to reduce fees in this world where it seems like everything is always going up. And I agree that we did over realize revenue. It was partly because of the instability with the county leaving. And I don't want to go into detail with all that, but we weren't sure about what the impact would be. And now that we have a much better situation and more data, more experience, we're able to spend down what we've overrealized. And I think doing it in a rational, well-planned way with checks every year, make sure that we're doing what we should do in terms of serving the public, but continuing in that direction of reducing fees is really a plus. I'm very much in favor of that. Thank you.
Absolutely. I think we all agree on that. Okay, any other questions or comments? No, seeing none, I'll open this up for public comment. Ms. Taggart.
Good afternoon again, and I appreciate the comments from you board members.
State your name. What you said?
I think you might have, but you guys know who I am. In listening to the discussion and that there were committees that vetted some of these ideas in how to create a budget for next year, and staff saying that the budget to actuals will be in next month's report. Are there budget to actuals available now? At the risk of running up your legal bill tab, I would like to request to see those, because that I have not seen. And that's where, if there's going to be a change in format to your financials each month, adding the year to date or some summary of that quarterly or something to show you where you're at. This past year, you've had some significant budget adjustments. And where are you now? Where are you now? That's important when looking to the future and for next year's budget. I will just piggyback on Ms. Mark's comments about how there is outreach, let's say, on the table. I completely agree. I've absorbed so much of your outreach over the years. I am a Nazi about my garbage. And so I feel that way about your garbage. And if your office doesn't walk the walk, what is the point of the outreach? You need to look in the mirror over there at the IWMA. I've done a few trash investigations myself, and you're not walking the walk. That office is not walking the walk. So I would ask that humility starts at home. And now that home is over at 555 Choro. But the behaviors were also occurring at 870 Osos. So look in the trash at home. And how can you recycle? And then you can go out and preach in your outreach of how to recycle. There's so much more. I would ask for an answer on the budget to actuals as of today, the year to date so far. How can I have that without incurring $275 an hour for Mr. Chung to look at something that should be public record and available right now as matter of course? That is one of the criticisms that I raised in my letter to you last night, is that I can't see that. I can't see that year to date. And some of you may have already seen it, but it's not available to us to help shape your budget for next year.
Thank you for your comments.
I was wondering, do we do any sort of mid-year budget review or anything like that?
We do.
Yes, Director Fardanesh. So I believe your agency provides quarterly updates that include budget and year-to-date.
Okay, thanks.
Quarterly. Okay. No motion required on this. Receive. Just a. Okay. Very good. Okay. We'll close that. And moving on to number 12, we have a new director to welcome today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Thank you, everyone, for having me. My name is Navid Fardanesh. I am from Templeton CSD, board member. I've been on there for 9 years, and I'm looking forward to working with everyone on IWMA.
Welcome. Thank you for being here. We also, is Robert not here today? It doesn't look like it. Okay, we wanted to give our thanks to Robert. This is being recorded.
Yes,
it is. So would anyone like to say anything? We're honoring Robert Inns for his, how many years was he on there?
That's just what I was wondering.
I think 18 or?
It's about the same time I came on, long time ago.
long timers. Yeah. This is for him. I'm sorry he's not here today. We'll start with my right. Would you like to say?
Robert, if you end up watching this, we appreciate your many years of service to this organization. Wish you the best.
Yeah, if you watch. Okay. Anyone else? Thank you for your service, Mr. Ian. Did you have something to say, Charles?
No, I mean, Robert was here when I got here, and other than John, I think he was here the longest. And so we appreciate his time and his service.
We'll make sure that he gets this. Okay. Now, moving on to number 13.
President Robert, I believe this is a resolution of the board, so if you'd like to...
Oh, we have to accept that. I'm sorry. Yes.
Take a vote.
Can I get a motion to accept the resolution number 25501?
I'll make a motion.
You'll make a motion to accept your. Okay, a second, please.
Hammond seconds.
Okay. Got a first and a second.
Okay. Can you please repeat the second?
The second was Mr.
Hammond.
Hammer.
Thank you.
Okay. You got a roll call?
Mr. Fardanesh?
Aye.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Barbeau?
Yes.
Ms. Edwards?
Yes.
Mr. Guthrie?
Yes.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Mr. Paulding?
Yes.
And Mr. Robert?
Yes.
This motion passes.
Recognition of Director Robert Ian's accepted and passed. Very good. Thank you for your service. Okay, employment contract for Peter Cron as interim administrator. Are you going to make a report on that? Are we just, there's not really a report. Approve and authorize the board to sign an executive direct employment agreement with Peter Cron to serve as interim administration on the IWMA. Actually, I think you should Thank you. On that?
Yes, President Robert. So I'm happy to make the staff report. Okay, so there's quite a bit of background in here. Again, in your January meeting, Mr. Cron notified your board that he intended to retire and that he has since stated that he intends for it to take effect, at least with respect to full-time service, no later than May 30th, 25. You've retained the services of an executive recruiter, and your board is in the middle of that process. I'll also note the obvious that your agency is required to have an executive director in place as the chief executive officer. Mr. Cron has offered to serve in a part-time interim capacity with the understanding that he will transition out as the interim executive director upon the appointment and beginning of service of your new executive director. As required by the Brown Act, the recommendation for compensation is in the discussion on page, begins on page 63 and on to page 64. This is essentially an hourly equivalent, an all-in hourly rate based on his current compensation. So you're not increasing it, you're just continuing his current compensation and making it, changing it to an hourly basis. The one thing that I will note in the employment agreement is that this is intended to allow for your board and for the new executive director, if you so desire, to allow him after what we define as the succession date, which is the first date that the new executive director begins their service, for Mr. Cron to continue on an hourly basis. So this is this contract is both for his service as the interim executive director until you get a new executive director, but also should the new director and your board want him to continue, he can continue under the same contract at the same hourly rate. So happy to answer any questions you might have. Otherwise, we do recommend that you approve the appointment of Peter Cron as the interim administrator and acting executive director, and approve the attached employment agreement with Mr. Cron as interim administrator.
Very good, thank you. We all have this on page 63. I'm sure you reviewed it. Any questions? Yes, sir.
Yeah, Daniel, with regard to who would pull the trigger on when he's used, is essentially the new executive director would be the one, and you say the board as well. So I'm not sure. I mean, we don't have to approve that because we're doing it here. But,
that's correct. So I should have been more precise in what I was saying. So the new executive director upon the beginning of their service would become the supervisor who determines whether or not, and if so, the scope of their service. At that point, it would, of course, be more limited hours. So there is a do not exceed hour amount in here. What I meant when I referred to the board is that this is an at-will contract, which means that should either Mr. Cron or your board decide, you know, let's make a clean break, let's terminate, you have the option to do that without any, and you can do that with or without cost.
This is more like a consultant fee. So
that's exactly correct. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. I had an almost identical question, but to follow on to that, then would we need to essentially authorize the new executive director a, you know, give that person some latitude and a time limit in terms of that he or she can engage at their discretion, Mr. Cron, for, I don't know, you know, 100 hours or something? Or
so you do not need to do that under this agreement. That will be up to the new executive director as to whether they'd like to avail themselves of that. As to the budgetary impact on that, I believe after the succession date, there is a maximum number of hours in here.
Okay.
Yep, so.
See that. All right, thank you.
Any other questions?
And I have one question on the line item for retirement 401k. So we offer 401k plans. So is that what we contribute, or?
So currently that is the amount that you contribute, but this is just showing you the math. So under Mr. Cron's new contract, you will not contribute to insurance, you will not contribute to his retirement. All of that is factored into the hourly rate.
Okay, that's, I just thought there was a limit to 401k contribution. I mean, if he
exceeded it,
yeah.
No, they said never not contributed.
Well, I know, but I just didn't know.
Yeah, it's gotten pretty large with catch-ups and everything.
5,000. I thought there wasn't a limit for 401ks at 30,000 annually.
So I think that there's also a catch-up factor that. So Yes, I don't have the amount based, I don't have the amount offhand, but it is compliant with the maximum.
Based on age. Okay, very good. Any other questions, comments? No? I'd like to open this up for public comment this time. Ms. Tackert?
Julie Tacker again. I'm not in favor of you continuing to work with Mr. Cron. I can see the May 30th deadline, and I think that should be it. If he is needed, he could be brought back as a consultant. But I think that in light of some of the things that I've brought to your attention in the past, and the turnover that seems to be quite extreme for such a small agency with so few people. I actually saw a quote this morning in my feed. Great employees quit because of management, not because of the work. And I looked in the mirror myself, and the jobs I've left were not because I didn't love the job. It was my manager. And I think that has occurred too often in the short period of time that Mr. Cron has been there. I am concerned about the same thing that your new board member, I hate to try to say your name. Offline, you can train me, yes. But the buck stops. When he's gone, he should be gone. And if there's some thing that that new administrator doesn't know, call him up, pay him a few bucks to answer some of the questions. But the idea of getting a new administrator, a new executive director, is that you would get someone who knows what they're doing. They've maybe had some experience. So I don't see the need for this overlap. And I think the sooner he has left the building, and I mean literally get his things and get out, the better for your staff.
Very good. Any other public comment? Not seeing any. Bring it back to the board. And I'll take a motion for this, please.
So moved.
Second.
I'll second it.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Paulding?
Yes.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Barbeau?
Yes.
Ms. Edwards?
Yes.
Mr. Fardanesh?
Aye.
Mr. Guthrie?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Mr. Robert?
Yes.
This motion passes.
Thank you very much. Okay. This time, I'd like to accept public comment for the closed session. The Board of Directors will recess in closed session pursuant to Brown Act, public complaint. We can take a break before we leave, but I'd like to get the public comment in.
You're going to want to read what those items are.
Yeah. Public Employment Executive Director. Number 14, number 15, conference with labor negotiators. 16th, conference with the labor negotiators also.
Again, Julie Tacker, and to item 14, this is a question I wondered about when interviews are occurring for a new executive director, and I don't know if I'll ever get that answer. With regard to item 15, one thing that I ran into when I started looking into some things at your agency, I did a public records request for the resume of Mr. Cron. And the answer back was that the district did not possess one. The recruiter does. Even though you paid the recruiter, you didn't get that resume. So I would ask that the new executive director's resume gets in the file, because that is fair information for all of us. And the last item, the conference with labor negotiators regarding SEIU, that goes back to Mr. Cron's departure. Your staff, I've seen this in other agencies, was afraid for their jobs and had to engage the union, which is costly for everyone. Costs the agency, costs the individuals, which means it costs me. Thank you again.
Thank you, Ms. Tackert. Okay, before we go into closed session, I'd like to take a little break.
Like 10 minutes.
10-minute break? Okay, so it is now 3:04. Say 3:15. Okay, 3:15. Are we going into another room?
I don't know.
Are we going to clear and have, I think we'll have it in here. Yeah. The board like to reconvene back into open session at 3:32 with no reportable actions. Items 14 and 15 will be continued as permitted by Government Code Section 54955. May I have a motion, please?
If you'd read the motion, President Robert, that's...
Okay, I'll read the motion. I have a motion and a second to adjourn and continue this regular meeting tomorrow, May 15th at 9 a.m. San Luis Obispo City Council Chambers at 990 Palm Street, San Luis Obispo. We have first.
So, and just a quick correction, that'll be the hearing room in the San Luis Obispo City.
Okay, that's
not the chambers, but the hearing room.
Yes, right. Thank you.
It's motion. Not in the script.
Chair Robert Hammond makes a motion on that.
I'll second.
First, get a second.
I'll second it.
No, we already got the second. Thank you. I was in your way. Okay, this is a non-debatable motion. Roll call, please.
Mr. Hammond.
The script.
Aye.
Mr. Barbeau.
Yes.
Ms. Edwards.
Yes.
Mr. Fardanesh.
Aye.
Mr. Guthrie.
Yes.
Ms. Marks.
Yes.
Mr. Newton.
Yes.
Mr. Pauling.
Yes.
And Mr. Robert.
Yes.
This motion passes.
I direct the staff to post the order or adjournment in a conspicuous location on or near the door of this meeting room, the meeting room that we're going to meet at tomorrow, the City Council Chambers, the IWMA office, and the IWMA website in accordance with Government Code Section 54955. The meeting is adjourned and continued tomorrow, May 15th at 9 a.m. at the Council Chambers at 9. Council Hearing Room. Thank you. At 990 Palm Street, San Luis Obispo.